Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Monday, March 14th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, we had a sort of another nasty day in the gold market today. We had gold down 17, currently in the New York spot at 12. 33. We have silver down 16 at 1541. Platinum is down 6, $961. And palladium is also down 5 at $573. The USDX today is trading higher, up 0.42 at 96.62. Crude oil was down 1.25 at 37.25. And the paper markets today, they were all positive for most of the day. You have the Dow back at 17,000. Oh, come on. 17,228. Up 15, the NASDAQ basically unchanged, 47.50, up a point. S&P was down 2.55 at 2019. 10-year yield, 1.96%. The euro was down, of course, 0.43 at 111. And Asian markets, Germany was up big at 162, still below that 10,000 level. And, of course, the Asian markets were stronger by over 1%. Japan was actually up almost 1.75%. And the trend is still greed to more to the greed than fear. And things have calmed. You know, oil prices have been rising, Al. But yet it's real interesting that I don't think we have yet, or the banks have yet, to experience all the defaults that are looming in the background. And last month we saw the oil prices plunge to a 13-year low to $26 a barrel. Now we're back up to the level we are today, 37. Natural gas prices, they still remain at 17-year lows. Baker Hughes said that there were just 480 rigs drilling for oil and natural gas last week, and that's down by 57% the year before. To me, that's a huge drop. The previous low was set in 1999, and they have been falling, just at this incredible speed in just these past months. So I don't think the banks have yet are experiencing the full assault of the defaults that's still coming from the oil industry. I think we've seen a lot of the impact on, you know, individuals as far as losing jobs, home prices in certain areas and so forth, where oil plays a very important factor. I think there's still a lot to be seen here in the oil industry.
I think long-term investments in oil are probably unwise. Long-term, there may be a lot of money to be made in the next several years. I don't doubt that. But I'm not convinced that if you were going to say, well, I'll buy some stock in the oil industry and leave it to my grandchildren and they will be have access to it in 20 years. I'm not sure that you better be pretty prophetic in order to pick an oil stock that will still be significant and prosperous 20 years from now, just because technology is changing. Too many things are moving. I mean, if they develop a battery that really works well, that's the only thing that's holding the electrical car back. They don't have batteries yet that are cost effective and that can come in at a price people can afford and can let them drive for 500 or 600 miles on one charge. Because at the point in time when they do that, and batteries that can be recharged quickly, when they have that range of 500-600 miles and they can be recharged quickly, I think the American gasoline engine is going to become fairly rare. It's not going to dominate automotive industry the way it does today. And when it goes, so will the petroleum industry and so on. You know, we talked a couple of years ago, it was popular to talk about peak oil. And we had reached a point where we had got the majority, we had found the majority of the oil that was available in the world. And from then on, it would continue to decline and decline. The supply would decline and prices would necessarily have to go up. Well, it's turned out that peak oil was just an illusion, at least so far. There are some people that believe that crude oil is not generated from biological residue. There's some people that think crude oil is actually being generated by some sort of a process within the earth itself. And if that's true, we're never going to run out of crude oil. We're going to be able to find it, and when we can't find it, wait around and there'll be more. The earth is perhaps making more. I believe they call it abiotic, meaning it's not from a biological source. Something chemical is happening in the earth to cause the creation of this, and it migrates up toward the surface, and we find it, pump it out, and use it in our automobiles. The point is that, as improbable as it sounds, it may be that the supply of crude oil is basically, I can't say it's unlimited, but we're not going to see peak oil. All right? And at the same time, the requirement for crude oil is likely to diminish. And not only because of batteries and electrical powered automobiles, but because we're going to see increasing technological improvement in solar energy, for example. And we're going to see increasing improvement in extracting energy from the wind. And all of this means, you know, it implies that crude oil, we'll still need it. We'll still use it as lubricants. And there'll be other uses for it. It's not going to disappear. But I don't believe it's going to grow over the course of the next 20 years to the same extent that the global economy is going to grow. I think there's going to be a divergence, and therefore, you know, right now, oil is still a viable investment and likely to become profitable again, significantly profitable in the relatively near future. But 20 years, that prediction is not, that's improbable. So we'll watch and see, Melanie.
pretty soon people will be using their fly mobiles.
Yeah, maybe their bicycles.
They will be flying.
They're going. Maybe we'll be using our bicycles, and we won't need any crude oil for gasoline
or batteries
or drive automobiles, electrical or otherwise. But
well, I would think if they
crude oil does not appear to be bright to me.
You know what will be bright is where they decide they can make the most money, and you know that is what will win out.
Well, that's always what wins out.
Yeah,
there's big significance here, and it's not just about who's going to win the money. All right? For example, what's going to happen to the Middle East if it turns out that crude oil is no longer much in demand? What happens then? All the Middle Eastern countries that are enriched by the presence of crude oil at the moment, they're going to lose that source of revenue. What will that do? Will that destabilize the Middle East? You bet. What happens to politics in a world where you could suspect for perhaps the last, since World War II, but the people who ran the oil industry were to significant degree setting American foreign policy? If oil's no longer play a major player and no longer absolutely necessary to the global economy, you know, what happens to the oil moguls who used to run things, and now they find out they're just kind of along for the ride? A lot of consequences flow from the possibility that oil is going to become less necessary in 20 years, within 20 years. And it could be obvious, this kind of prediction could be obvious maybe 10 years, maybe even earlier. And it could be just undeniable by 20 years. Could be over by then, but we'll watch and see. I'd say crude oil has another good 5 years, right? Reasonably good. But then after that, we'll watch and see.
Well, we'll just see how fast this technology can. You can say that they already have the technology, but they'll just milk it until they, you know, actually run out. But speaking of automobiles, to understand how far the U.S. auto business has been reaching for new customers, there's an early performance of a bond issue called SKOPOS, S-K-O-P-O-S, Auto Receivables Trust 2015-2. These bonds were built out of subprime auto loans and sold in November. And through February, about 12% of these underlying loans were at least 30 days past due, a third of which were more than 60 days delinquent. And another 2.6% of loans, borrowers had filed for bankruptcy or the vehicles have been repossessed. So again, you have this auto industry that is out there doing all these subprime loans, and you know, all the majority of these borrowers are on the fringe of if they can get it for nothing. So there's a high level of missed payments for these loans, and
you're talking about the majority of the loans. Track the numbers you're talking about, if you're not talking about 10 or 15 or 20%, I don't recall the numbers you said. You had two major numbers. One was over 30%, and I think the first one was over 30% also. Am I mistaken?
12% of the underlying loans were at least 30 days past due. A third of which were more than 60 days delinquent.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And another 2.6% had filed for bankruptcy.
Then we're talking 15-20% of the loans are delinquent at this point in time. So it's not over 50%, but it's 15-20% somewhere in that range are delinquent at this time. Even so, how do they deal with that?
No, you're right. A third, which would be plus 12% plus 2.6, so you're right the first time.
Well, I'm usually right, Melody.
I
know that they don't usually say it until after the program is over. He's like, you know what? I think that guy was actually right. In this case, I'm not convinced that I'm right, but I'll accept the compliment. I will, Frank, get that, cut that segment out of the program, record it. send it to me with a bronze plaque. I think I finally won the award. Any case. You can't blame these people, though, because how would they know that subprime auto loans wouldn't work? I mean, it's not like we have previous experience with subprime mortgage loans that failed. Or did we, Melody? Oh, yeah, we did. That was a failure, too, wasn't it? And, gee, who would have ever thought that subprime auto loans would be as big a failure as subprime mortgage loans? I mean, that was in the old days. That was 8-10 years ago that they failed. The more subprime mortgages, surely we couldn't have the same principles applied today as applied then, could we?
No.
I don't know. It's just so crazy. And everyone shocked, I tell you. Oh, my God.
This is just another sign, folks. It's not the record auto sales is not due to a great economy, but it's only due to the easy auto lending that has been given to them. And, the 2015, sales of new cars and light trucks came in at a record 17.5 million.
Yeah.
And the strong pace is basically carried into this year. Sales of used cars, which is a majority of subprime borrowers purchase, they're also increasing. And it's almost to the amount of U.S. auto loans is almost as high as student debt, $1 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
And a fifth is made to subprime borrowers. And that's according to Equifax.
So we've got $2 trillion basically in loans to students who probably half of them at least won't pay. And we've got another $1 trillion on subprime autos, if I'm understanding it correctly,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Of which, I don't know, 20% won't pay. So we're talking, by the time we got done, we've got $2 trillion out there, and probably 30, 40% of that $2 trillion is going to disappear, and maybe more than that. I mean, if the students really start to refuse to pay, what are they going to do? Jail them all? And they may not be able to. If they can't get jobs, they went to college so they could get better jobs. If they can't get better jobs...
At least they'll vote for Bernie. But one more fact on this. 87% of the loans were to borrowers with credit scores below 600. And we know the scale is 300 to 850. And a third of those had scores below 500 or no credit scores at all. So just another accident waiting to happen. And
happening to some extent. Mm-hmm. The big accident... The real wreck, of course, will be the national debt.
Mm-hmm.
Because sooner or later, they are going to have to admit that the national debt is even bigger than what the students owe, and even bigger than what the subprime automobile borrowers owe, and even less likely to be repaid. And when it does, it's going to be a messy time for people who don't have savings of their own that they can protect on their own, which almost certainly means not in a bank, not in a digital format. Savings that you can lay hands on, because there's going to be automobiles and homes and God knows what for sale for, who knows, 20% of what they're worth today. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners to give us a call at our telephone number and visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to these programs or archived on a weekly and daily basis. So make sure you get to the website, dgscoins.com. During the break, Al and I were talking about some information that was released about Vladimir Putin, his ordering a surprised partial withdrawal of Russian military forces from Syria, hoping that it will put some pressure on al-Assad to strike a deal ending 5 years of war. They're going to keep the Russian air base, and the naval facility will continue to function. And so we'll just have to see if his message that he is in control in Syria and if it'll force Assad to the negotiating table. Kind of makes you wonder whether he is trying to force Assad to the negotiating table, or if he just can't afford to continue the presence in Syria.
Yeah, I agree. It's surprising. Putin's got to be under a lot of pressure to pull any of his military out of Syria at this time. And I don't necessarily mean military pressure, but perhaps economic. I'm not sure what's happening here, but Putin has blinked. That's perhaps the most important point. Putin has been unrelenting, practically, in his attempts to stand up against the West or whoever. When Putin said something, that was the way it was. Now Putin has backed up, and it may be that he's run out of gas, or he thinks he's cut another deal, or who knows what's happening here. But this is certainly kind of report that gets you talking to yourself and makes you wonder what is happening here. If Putin, on the other hand, if he's pulling military out, But he's keeping the air base and he's keeping the naval port. Presumably, the last report I heard, they had some sort of a frigate or cruiser or whatever, Russian cruiser, that was capable of firing, I don't know, 15, 20 more, who knows, drones. These presumably are equipped with nuclear weapons, or at least can be. As long as that's there, they still wield an enormous amount of power. Same thing is true with the Russian air base. Assuming all the airplanes remain, they are certainly capable of using tactical nuclear weapons. What are we going to have here? It's another one of those, we use the analogy leaf in the breeze regularly on this program. This is another one. And it doesn't tell us which way the wind is blowing. We can see this wheat leaf dancing outside the window, but I don't know if the wind is coming from the north or the south or the east or the west. It just caught that leaf in a place. What we do know is that the leaf is moving more rapidly than it has recently. I don't know which way the wind is blowing, but it's blowing stronger. So we'll see. It'll be interesting, and who knows? Interesting may be insufficient. The word may be insufficient to describe what's happening if Russia is beginning to withdraw from Syria. But it's a surprising sign, because it will be understood by the people of Russia as evidence that they are not, that their economy, their system, whatever, is not as strong as they may have previously imagined. I really have a hard time imagining why Putin did this. He may have perfectly good, innocent, and minor reason. Maybe. But I'm looking at it and I'm saying he's going to catch some negative pressure off of this. And where is it going to wind up? Has Russia been overrated up until now? Have we perceived them to be much stronger than they really are? And are we finally beginning to see, they're really kind of weak? Or has Putin cut another deal with someone else? Is he betraying someone else? We'll find out. I don't doubt that the truth will be known. Right? Maybe several versions of the truth may be known in the near future, and we'll have an opportunity to figure out which one might be most true.
It'll be interesting to see what the U.S. response is and how the U.S. will go forward in dealing with al-Assad. As you know, they want him out of there. And is this Russia pulling out is giving the, or little that he is or big that he is this giving them sort of the okay to go in there and take him out?
Yeah, but I don't think the United States is going into Syria any more than it is already. I don't expect to be sending more American...
That doesn't mean they won't take al-Assad out.
No, I understand that, but they'll do it with proxies. I'm just saying I don't expect
that's my point.
On the ground in Syria.
Is this Putin's way of saying, there you go, guys?
Well, it kind of sounds like it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the sort of thing where you can sit back and say, what did you get for cutting that deal, Mr. Putin? I mean, and what are you going to lose? If it turns out that Putin is going to betray an ally, he's going to lose a lot. If it turns out that Putin is weaker than people expected, he's going to lose a lot, not only on the international stage, but domestically. Russian people will lose a certain amount of enthusiasm and confidence in their government and Putin if he backs out of this situation. So this strikes me as maybe a small thing, but the implication is pretty large, or at least maybe. So we'll watch and see.
Or it could have been, we'll give you, we'll back out of Ukraine and we won't give you such a hard time over it if you back out of Syria. So who knows? We'll find out, I guess, maybe, perhaps.
Well, maybe that's the deal. Yeah. Maybe that's the deal. I mean, that would make a little sense to me. If Putin backed out of Syria on condition that the United States backed out of Ukraine, that would make a little sense to me. All right? You could walk away from that and still say, well, we cut a good deal for us. Wasn't very good for Ukraine or Syria, but it was good for the Russians and maybe good for the Americans as well.
No, I think that's about this point in time. That's the only thing that matters to those powers to be. Yeah, I think they give very little care to the Ukrainians or the Syrians.
Of course, they're just pawns
there
on the chessboard. That's all. Yeah. They get used and sacrificed, and nobody pays too much attention to them. Got an article here from Washington Times. It says MoveOn.org raising funds from Trump protests warns more disruptions to come. MoveOn.org. You may remember that organization. I believe they were the ones responsible for the sit-ins on Wall Street a couple of years ago. Generated a great deal of publicity at the time. I haven't heard much from them in the past several years. MoveOn.org is conducting fundraising activities from the Chicago protests against Donald Trump that prompted the Republican presidential frontrunner to cancel a rally there Friday, and promises that more disruptions are on the way. It was not a good thing, in my opinion, for Trump to cancel that rally. All right, he's backing down to these people. He may make up for that in the future, but that's not a good thing for Trump to cancel the rally. It shows that he may be less willing to fight. And the question really is, one of the things that's attracted to people to Trump so far is that he appears willing to fight, while the rest of the politicians appear only willing to posture, all right? They're not really willing to fight. They're not, the backing out of this rally, that's not a good thing for, Mr. Trump, in my opinion.
Well, I don't think he needed to go and fight. I mean, it's Chicago, for heaven's sakes. It's probably one of the most violent, if not the number one city of violence in the country. I wouldn't go there either.
Putin doesn't need to fight in the
And
city.
I've got lots of customers in Chicago, so, from what you read and hear, Chicago's a very violent city. And, I don't see it as being weak. And I'm not sticking up for Trump, but I just wouldn't see it as being weak.
Well, I think some people do.
Well,
in any case,
they're the ones with the problem. Go ahead.
Well, here's another one. There's an email that was quoted from MoveOn. We need to double down on our work showing America is better than Trump's bullying, hate baiting, and incitements to violence. We're committed to nonviolence, but we will not be silent. We will not be invisible. The group detailed efforts in recent months, highlighting ads it has run against the real estate mogul and the advocacy it has done on behalf of refugees. What do they mean by refugees, Melody?
You tell me.
Aliens. Illegal aliens. MoveOn is moving to support the illegal aliens, and they've run a few ads in the last couple of weeks, and they are expressing some advocacy they've done on behalf of refugees, but they're talking about illegal aliens. Who MoveOn said are under attack from the GOP and support it gave to Trump protesters in Chicago. Now, I read this as MoveOn is trying to tell the world that it inspired the Chicago demonstrations, that it's essentially leading the movement against Trump. That's not the case. But in doing so, MoveOn's only trying to exploit the Chicago demonstrations and regain a leadership role in leftist politics that was strong a couple of years ago, when they were demonstrating against Wall Street, and is now not so strong. Nevertheless, it's ironic that many of the anti-group demonstrators are black. Since the influx of illegal aliens favored by the left, Obama and MoveOn, will only help bring more illegals into the country who will take jobs that would otherwise go to blacks. Blacks that are supporting MoveOn are supporting an increase in illegal aliens. Trump intends to build a wall between Mexico and the United States that will stop the influx of illegal aliens and thereby help blacks get more jobs. If blacks had any sense, we would assume they'd support Trump. However, who do they support? They support the leftists who will push blacks deeper into poverty and into dependence.
Yeah,
right? Who do blacks despise? They despise Trump, who would stop the illegals and thereby help get jobs to blacks. Now, either a significant portion of the black community is irrational, or they would simply rather have welfare checks under Hillary than jobs under Trump.
Well, I don't think anybody that's tied to this MoveOn.org is any, you know, is the poster for, you know, most people. I mean, they're paid to create disruption. So, you know, they're just a bunch of thugs, and I don't think it has any relationship to, you know, to what a particular community would, you know, agree or disagree. They're just a bunch of paid thugs to go and create situations.
I mean,
just like you had in Ferguson's, they were, you know, Soros paid those people to go to Ferguson to create situations. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's Soros that should be arrested because if you and I did this, we'd be arrested. If anybody else in this country would, you know, pay people to go and have protests and even warn and tell people there's going to be more disruptions to the violence side. I mean, come on. What is wrong with that? These people, you know, it's... Anyway.
Well, where this is significant is here we are. Tomorrow is the 5-state primary, North Carolina, Florida, Missouri, Illinois, and Ohio. The big ones are Ohio and Florida, and it looks like Trump has Florida knocked, if we can believe the polls. The polls I've seen indicate that the election up in Ohio is extremely close. Could go either way. What's going to be interesting is to see whether or not the violence that was perpetrated at the Trump rally in Chicago or threatened at another Trump rally, is that going to intimidate people from supporting Trump in the Ohio primary? Or is it going to stiffen their resolve and say, I'm going to vote. I don't care what's going on. I'm going to vote. We're going to find out, and it's going to be an important lesson because we're going to find out whether violence at some rallies can effectively influence the outcome of primaries or other elections. And if so, is it going to be tolerated in the United States that violence take place at these rallies? You have a rally for Trump, for Rubio, forever. People want for whoever. And if somebody wants to come in and disrupt it and perhaps precipitate violence, will we accept that or will we say, no, we're not? We'll get the message. The protesters themselves, the demonstrators, will get the message. Let's suppose that Trump does surprisingly well and wins Ohio. It will be a slap in the face to everybody who came to his demonstration to protest and demonstrate and try to disrupt. They will learn that, holy cow, when we act like a bunch of thugs, all we do is make people more determined to vote for Mr. Trump. On the other hand, if Trump wins or loses by, say, 10%, more than anyone expects, violence, the people who demonstrated, the people who caused Trump to cancel his rally, they're going to sit back and say, violence works. And is that a good thing?
I don't know if they're going to say violence because I think most people look at these guys that are there doing the protesting and the violence. They are just what they are, a bunch of thugs. And I don't think that particular thing. Now, when you tie them to groups so he doesn't get any votes, yeah, they're just going to vote for him just to fight the group. I don't think it has anything to do whether it just brings attention, but they're more upset with the groups that are supporting these people that are creating the violence and these disruptions. If anybody ever said anything bad about Trump, then automatically everybody seems to glom on to him. You know, they're trying to support and protect him or whatever. I mean, it's really kind of crazy, but so I don't know if that would be tied directly to the actual violence. I think it would be tied mainly to the groups that are, or the establishment, so to speak. Every time, look what happened when Romney spoke out. There was no violence there, but just because he spoke out against it, people started, you know, disassociating themselves from the quote-unquote establishment.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll talk about the establishment. We'll talk about violence when we can return. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be right back to talk about violence and the establishment. Please stay tuned.
PSA count high? Half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free 866-229-3663 for international callers 704-875-8010. That's toll free 866-229-3663 or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisker with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we told you when we came back we'd be talking about violence in this election.
But before you do, Al, I'd like to say one thing. I want to remind the listeners or tell them that Greg Hunter will be joining us tomorrow about 4:10, 10 minutes after the top of the hour, and he'll join us for the full segments of the program. So for Tuesday, March 15th, Greg Hunter will be here joining us. And I know everyone enjoys Greg as I do. So.
All right. So in terms of the election, first thing you need to understand or at least recognize is that this may be the most exciting political election we've had. Exciting, controversial, divisive, whole bunch of things going on here. But this is perhaps the most exciting political election we've had in the United States since the election of Richard Nixon back in 1968. In that tumultuous election year, we saw one, the assassination of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. Two, subsequent race riots across the United States. Three, the assassination of Democratic presidential candidate Robert E. Kennedy. Four, widespread opposition to the Vietnam War across the university campuses. And five, visual or violent confrontations between the police and anti-war demonstrators as the Democrats split into multiple factions at the 1968 Democrat National Convention. When violence gets out of hand, it gets out of hand. I mean, we're talking about, two assassinations in 1968, of significant political figures, race riots, university demonstrations, violent confrontations between the police and anti-war protesters at the Democrat National Convention. This year's election isn't in that league just yet, but we are kind of approaching that level. And we're going to watch and see how this, and I'm certainly hoping we don't wind up with any assassinations, but the way things are going, we're going to have to watch and see. This is a strange situation. What we've seen with Trump is the first assault on his candidacy was from the rich, the establishment Republicans. The Republican establishment represents those rich people who get subsidies from Washington. The subsidized rich have conspired to derail Trump's nomination and keep the subsidy gravy train rolling. Their attempts to stop Trump have not only failed, but have actually inspired more people to support Trump. The establishment tried to stop him. Who are the establishment? These are not ideologues. These are people who are using Washington for their own wealth and power. And they don't want that to stop. And they say, we've got to stop Trump. He might disrupt our gravy train. But now we see in Chicago, the left-wing welfare recipients have launched violent demonstrations against Trump at Trump rallies. Now, the big question is whether these welfare recipients will diminish Trump's support or actually increase it in the Tuesday primary in Ohio. But the point here is that the reason the left is opposed to Trump is because he's going to, some of them, I've seen videos on it, where at least some black people think he's going to disrupt welfare. They want their welfare checks to keep coming. The poor want the welfare. The rich want the subsidies. Who, and the government, of course, they always want money from anybody who's got it. So who is it that is most likely to support Trump? It's not the parasites, the super rich. It's not the parasites at the poor. It's the middle class, insofar as we still have one. They're the people who actually produce things who ultimately support the rich on subsidies and the poor on welfare. And they're the ones who are being deprived. The idea is, well, we can take more money from the middle class and more money from the middle class and make more promises to the parasites at both ends of the political spectrum. Those parasitical, those dependent groups, dependent on easy money from the government, they're the ones that are against Trump right now. And the only one who's likely to support him will be the middle class. So we're going to watch and see. This is going to be, and the middle class has been badly decimated, but there may be a lot of people who are no longer middle class but want to be, and they want to return to their status as middle class. There may even be people in the lower economic portions of the economy who want to rise to a middle class level, and they may be natural supporters for Trump. One other point. Talk about violence, and there have been a number of comments where Trump himself has been accused of being the one who's precipitated the violence that we saw in Chicago just recently, and that we may see elsewhere. And they're trying to pin the rap on Trump. That's not true. What Trump has done is he has been a lightning rod for the anger that's already there in the American people. He's given that anger credence by recognizing it. He didn't make the anger. The anger that we're seeing in the American people, we can trace it back to a bunch of things. We can trace it back to the export of American industries and jobs to third world countries like China and the consequent loss of American jobs. That made people angry. We can look at the treasonous support for the North American Union and the New World Order by our own government. That makes people angry. The encouragement of the influx of illegal aliens and consequent lowering of Americans' wage scale and standard of living. That makes people angry. The unending growth in the size and tyranny of our government, that makes people angry. The destruction of the middle class makes people angry. The encouragement of entitlement thinking, where people who earn nothing are taught to believe they're entitled to live as parasites off other people's productive efforts, that makes some people angry. The growth of the national debt to a size that's not only unpayable, but may soon collapse our economy and maybe destroy our nation. That makes people angry. The loss of constitutional monetary system, gold and silver, found in Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 of the Constitution, that would have allowed people to safely save for their futures and retirement rather than have their wealth eaten away by inflation. It makes people angry. The maintenance of a national emergency that's been going on since the banking emergency was declared back in 1933. Over 80 years, we have allegedly been in a national emergency, and it's been used by government as a pretext to suspend the Constitution. That's not generally recognized, but it makes people angry. All of these atrocities, betrayals, violations, and of the Constitution and acts of treason have been perpetrated against the productive elements, people of the people in middle class. of the United States of America. All of these atrocities, betrayals, violations, and via the Constitution and acts of treason have generated an anger in much of the American people that is profound, and it's been simmering and unstated, but it's been there. And Trump stood up, and he recognized it, and he gave it some credibility. Trump didn't make the anger. The Republican and Democrat leaders of the last two generations made that anger. And it's been building up like an avalanche, like snowflakes in an avalanche. It just keeps slowly piling up and slowly piling up. And we've all heard the metaphor. And finally, we get that one flake triggers the avalanche. We are seeing that avalanche to some degree with the Trump popularity. Again, Trump didn't make the anger, but for the past 40 years, the good people of this country, the productive people of this country, tried to suppress that anger that their government has allowed and precipitated. Now Trump has appeared and tapped into that anger, released the anger. The government, the subsidized rich, the welfare-entitled poor are blaming Trump for causing the anger. Trump didn't cause it. He just named it. He treated the people who were already angry with enough respect to simply consider and recognize their anger and the cause of their anger, and the government's attempts, and our own government's attempts to destroy the United States of America. Now, those destroyers want to blame Trump for the anger that they themselves have caused over the last 40 years. Tomorrow, Tuesday, we may win, we may lose, we may learn if those destroyers will win or lose. If Trump wins Ohio, the destroyers will suffer significant defeat. If Trump if Trump wins, we might still have a chance to restore the United States. But the main point is this: Trump didn't make the anger. He recognized it. He gave it credibility. He saw it in the American body politic, and he gave it a voice. And now people are all upset. And say, oh, Trump. Bunk. Trump didn't make this. Trump may take advantage of it, but what he did more than anything else was say, hey, these people are angry, and they're right. And a lot of people are attracted to that, and we will see where this goes. But tomorrow is going to be a big day in Ohio, because we're going to learn whether the violence can work to cause Trump to lose the election, or if the violence is actually counterproductive and actually causes Trump to win by 10%. Now, I'm not betting, I'm not predicting he's going to hit 10%. But if he wins a significant victory, it'll be evidence that the violent demonstrations don't work. It'll be evidence that every time, it'll be like Obama. He says, oh, they shot some people. We've got to take everybody's guns away because a dozen people got shot. Bunk. All right? It's not true. And you can't just play on that and use a disaster as justification to disenfranchise people, to take their guns away, to diminish their rights. That's what the left wants to do. That's even what the right wants to do out at the extreme. The establishment, the subsidized rich, that's what they want to do. They're not objecting to that. They want to exploit the middle class. And Trump has said no, at least as I read it. I'm not saying he says it clear. I'm not saying that he says no clearly, but he says no in a way that is at least inferred in general. So we'll watch and see. Tomorrow is going to be an important day. We're going to learn if violence works in this country or if it's to be rejected. What do you think, Melody? Shall we have more or less of more violence or less?
Well, of course there should be less.
You never know. You know what I mean? In the Declaration of Independence, it says, and I'll try to pull it up here and quote it here, it says, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide such new guards for their future security. and provide new guards for their future security. Founding Fathers said, you know, when they keep on usurping powers, they keep on pushing you into despotism, you see that pattern, you can't deny it. It's not just your right to resist. It's your duty to resist, and that resistance will not be achieved simply by handing out pamphlets. Something's going on right now. This is going to be an extraordinary election, and the last time we saw anything like it may have been 1968 during the Vietnam War.
Wouldn't you say the resistance isn't by those who have a deep belief of their country, but only because they're getting paid to disrupt? That's what they do. Wouldn't you think there's two different reasons? It's not people that are being disruptive because they have a view and a point that they're trying to make. These are just people. So,
but the Declaration said when you see a pattern that evinces a design to subject the people to absolute despotism, you got to stand up and you got to fight. All right. If the pattern includes hiring people to go disrupt rallies, that has to be fought against. All right. And the people who are pulling the strings say, "I'll pay you $50 or $100 or whatever to go disrupt this convention." Those people need to be identified. They need to be fought, hammer and tong. Not let them hide in the background where nobody knows who they are. They need to be identified. They need to be taken down. They want to rely on violence. They shouldn't be surprised if they get violence. And in the internet age, how do you keep a secret? If it's true that they're hiring people to disrupt Trump's rallies, if they're being hired, some of them are going to go public. Right? You can't count on their silence. Some of them are going to go public, and when they do, this whole thing is going to explode. We're going to see, again, the last time we had an election like this was 1968. So fasten your lap straps, folks. This is going to be an interesting and maybe shocking election year. We're out of time. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back mañana with Greg Hunter. Hope you will tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too fast.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
Money, money, money. Must be funny.